151 years in the making. This is the First in Football Podcast, your look at Princeton Tigers football. Here's your host, Cody Kruschel.
This week on the First in Football Podcast, defensive coordinator Steve Verbit's new endeavor.
To get on the field during the course of the fall, I've actually been working on Wednesday nights and Saturday afternoons, helping to coach a 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old flag football team.
Junior defensive lineman Uche Nadukwe on his short-lived high school rowing career.
I was a little bit smaller. It was freshman year. I made varsity and I was like, this isn't for me. I was like, I'd much rather play football. So I did it. It was a good experience.
And 7-year NFL veteran Karan Reed on when he realized playing at the next level was a possibility.
I didn't think of myself as being that caliber of a player, but having Sarace hammer that home to me, and then the next year having scouts actually at practice looking at me was like a different kind of feeling, which was like, okay, this is real. But because no one had really gone through that path before, it was still just like, is this a real thing? And then when Cat got drafted, then it was like, oh, okay, the opportunity is for real.
Steve Verbit, Uche Nadukwe, and Karan Reed on this week's episode of the First in Football Podcast. Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit GEICO.com to learn more. Kicking things off today on the podcast with the longest tenured member of the Princeton coaching staff, the senior associate head coach, defensive coordinator, defensive line coach, part of 7 Ivy League titles at Princeton, and a man who really didn't need that introduction, Steve Verbit. Coach, 36 years at Princeton. You've been coaching longer than that, and I know there hasn't been a formal schedule and practices and football activities here at Princeton in 2020. Talking off air before we came on, that hasn't kept you off the football field.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, we've been able to keep busy, as you should be. I mean, the only thing about the fall that's different is the personal aspect of it. You know, you spend a ton of time meeting with your players, you know, during the course of the week. On a positive aspect of this, we've had more opportunities to get to know your players better on a personal basis, you know, more individual conversations, which to me has been an unbelievable highlight, to get to know the very, very, very special young men. But to get on the field during the course of the fall, I've actually been working on Wednesday nights and Saturday afternoons, helping to coach a 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old flag football team. So, you know, I'm still on the field. It's not the same. It's not in the, you know, Princeton Stadium with the Princeton Tigers, but we're actually working with a group of young guys, 12 on each team, working out of Seagirt in the Spring Lake area. I have an opportunity to coach my grandson and a lot of his friends on Wednesday night in terms of teaching them the fundamentals and techniques about the game and then allowing them to compete, you know, with one another on Saturday afternoon. So that's been a fun experience working with the youngsters and having an opportunity to meet a lot of other guys, you know, from the area that have great expertise about the game and about how to teach fundamentals and techniques to young people.
Anyone who's followed you on Twitter, seen the alumni updates over the last 8 or 9 months, sort of a where are they now for players who have come through this program. It's been great for me because I've only been at Princeton for 5 years, so I've sort of been able to dive back and look into some of those teams that I haven't had a chance to see in person. Rebuilding and rekindling a lot of those connections, that's got to make you proud to see the success your guys have had after Princeton.
Well, Bob Sarace and I have had so much fun, you know, since we began this back in March, in terms of each day highlighting a particular a former player. And Bob is absolutely marvelous in terms of, you know, how he reaches out and brings the alumni and makes them feel like they have ownership in the program. So, you know, my enthusiasm actually feeds off Bob's, and it gives us an opportunity to, you know, allow other guys from the past to see what, you know, a lot of their friends or guys that came before them or after them, what they're doing. And then it allows the young men that we're recruiting to see the fantastic success that our players here from Princeton have had, because the prospects, they all want to be those guys. You know, they want to be the CEOs. They want to be involved in investment banking and in sales and trading. They want to, you know, be the CEO of a commercial real estate company. They're entrepreneur. They want to be entrepreneurs. So that's been an absolute blast. And each day to, you know, to pick out either one, two, or three different guys that we're going to highlight and then get it out on Twitter and to see their response, because inevitably people think, oh, they forgot about me. You know what? No, we didn't. And this gives, you know, Bob and I an opportunity to reach out, say hello, express our gratitude for what so many people have done for our program, you know, over the last 10, 20, 30, and 40 years.
Recruiting aside, how helpful is what you just mentioned from a player development standpoint? You know, you get your incoming class and you get these kids on campus. How helpful is it that you talk to them about where they want to go and what their career is going to be after football, knowing that there's a pretty good chance that there's someone that's come through this program before them that's in the spot they want to get to career-wise?
I mean, no question. That's why you choose a school like Princeton. I mean, we're looking for the guy that wants to play on Sundays. You know, a guy that loves the game of football, has a tremendous, tremendous commitment in terms of his fitness level and increasing his knowledge of the game and wanting to be as great a player as he possibly can be. But again, we want the guy that does want to be a CEO, that wants to be involved in investment banking, that wants to, you know, be highly successful on Wall Street or create his own company. So with that in mind, you know, you look at the number of people that have gone through our program and the variety of fields that they've been involved with. And there's no question we can help our players, you know, with the introductions. Ultimately, they've got to run with it. But there are so many people out there that, you know, Bob's been with the program since, you know, he's a graduate of class of 1990. I've been fortunate to be here for a number of years. So we've made great friendships. We've built tremendous relationships with a lot of people in a lot of different areas. So yeah, when a young guy does, you know, ask Bob, ask myself, or ask possibly one of the other coaches, and we'll put our heads together. Okay, who do we have that's involved in investment banking? You know, who do we have that's that may be the owner of a commercial real estate company? Who do we have that's involved with the technology industry? And we can easily, you know, by putting our heads together, you know, come up with a number of games, you know, provide the young man with the contact information, and they run with it. And to be quite honest with you, our guys are phenomenal in terms of the way they give back, you know, from a mentoring standpoint. And the reason they're so generous is because they know at some point, sometime, someone gave back to them. Someone told them their story and how they got to where they are today. So over the past 36 years, I can honestly say no one has ever said no that we've reached out to and asked them to mentor one of our young guys. And you talk about a positive experience and Princeton and the nation's service. Our guys are fantastic for the way they give back to the place that they give credit that helped them achieve where they are today.
I want to talk about a couple defensive linemen that we're going to feature on the podcast today. Let's start with one of your upperclassmen, Uche Nadukwe. He saw some time as a freshman and then last fall as a sophomore, 3 sacks, 12 tackles, saw his role expand. He was his high school class president. He's active on campus at Princeton. So a guy that's already been a leader everywhere he's been. 2 years of eligibility left. What's the ceiling for him?
I'll tell you what, Uche's, he improves leaps and bounds each and every day. Like he actually tore his Achilles tendon at our summer football camp. And so he missed his entire senior year of high school. And an Achilles tear is tough to come back from, but he's got a tremendous, tremendous work ethic and a great commitment to the game. So he continued to rehab. He works hard with Coach Gallucci, you know, in the weight room. And his work ethic on the field is absolutely phenomenal. You know, in terms of, you know, he's got great size. He's got tremendous speed. He's got quick hands and he's got quick feet. And yeah, you know, you never know the upside or how far a guy can go. But as long as the guy's got an unlimited ceiling as long as he's got a tremendous work ethic. And not only on the field, but off the field. He's got to be great in the weight room, and he's got to be great in the film room. He's got to want to absorb as much knowledge as he possibly can to understand the game. And Uche is that type of guy. He is, as you mentioned, he's been a leader all his life. And as he continues to get better each and every day, his leadership role continues to grow with us. But he's got a great upside. He had a good year last year. Now we'll see over the next 2 years how he continues to grow. And that's the fun thing for us as coaches. I mean, we take great pride in trying to help a young man achieve the dreams that he's set for himself. And we've been fortunate enough to put a couple guys in the NFL in terms of Mike Catapano and Caron Reed, you know, since 2013. And hopefully, you know, Uche is the next in line.
Talk about Caron Reed. I mean, he's a defensive lineman with the Jaguars. You mentioned it, a 2014 graduate, a guy that you mentioned you want guys that want to come here and want to play on Sundays. Caron, since he was drafted by the Lions a few years back, has carved out a pretty productive NFL career. Looking back at his time here, what point did you realize Caron had a shot to play at the next level?
We were fortunate enough to have two of them here at the same time. We had Mike Catapano that graduated in 2014 and Caron Reed that graduated in 13 and 14. Both of those guys, it's all about commitment to the game. They both had great size. They both had great work ethic. And they both dreamed of playing at the next level. And that's what it takes. You know, you've got to find that young man that wants to be a Sunday player. And, you know, Caron was one of those guys. You look at him, he's 6'2", he's 260 pounds when he first came in here. So he had the physical tools right from the beginning. And then he went from 260 to 270, and he went from 270 to 285. And as he continued to grow, he always was able to maintain his speed. And he's got great lower body strength and great explosiveness. And, you know, as he played, and he played for 4 years, you know, he played 50% of the snaps from the opening game as a freshman. And as the years went on, you know, following the first year, good first year as a freshman. But then sophomore, junior year, then he started to dominate. He's very, very difficult to block. He would win the majority, if not all, of his one-on-ones. And he took great pride in terms of being the best player on the field each and every week. And he practiced that way. You know, you got to have the combination of everything. You got to love the game. You got to have a great commitment. And it's not only about game day. It's what you do off the field. And he was that type of guy that everybody turned to, you know, from a work ethic standpoint. He demonstrated, he showed us, he showed the other guys the way. If you want to be a great player, this is the way you got to work on a daily basis to achieve high status from that standpoint. And, you know, he dominated the final 3 years of his career. He dominated the game.
You were part of the coaching staff here when Bob Cerace is a player. Now you've coached alongside him for the better part of the last decade, but your relationship with the Cerace family goes back long before your time at Princeton.
Well, there's no question about it. I know Bob's dad for probably 45 years, and Bob's father, Tony Cerace, was an icon, or is an icon, in the history of New Jersey football coaching. You know, one of the most respected, well-known, a tremendous teacher, a better person. And when you mention the name of Tony Cerace in the state of New Jersey, it brings a smile to his face. It brings a smile, you know, to your face, because he's the type of coach that all of us aspired to be, you know, not only good on the field, but had the respect of all of his peers and all of his players. And Bob's the same way. He's son of a coach. He understands the relationships that come with being a football coach. It's not all about winning games. And don't get me wrong, winning games is very, very important. But it's teaching the young men the little things in terms of personality, character, you know, the things that they demonstrate on the field in terms of being the right guy, you know, being a good teammate, you know, reaching out in times of need. And that's what Bob does. And it just filters down from Bob to all of us as football coaches. And I think that's why we've had great success, you know, here at Princeton, because of the things that you know, he talks to us all about, you know, on a daily basis. You know, it's about taking care of the young man. I mean, we're going to help him achieve the dreams, both on and off the field, that he's set for himself. But it's more about getting to know the young man personally, helping him understand how much we care about him off the field is every bit as important as it is for our success on the field. But Bob's an absolute pleasure. I mean, you know, coming to work each and every day, it's a party. It's, you know, you're being surrounded, you know, and working with someone that you have a tremendous amount of respect for and enjoy being around. Sometimes it is 24/7, but he's so unbelievably easy to be around and fun to be around.
Coach Verbit, great catching up with you.
Cody, always. Thank you very much.
From the Jersey Shore to the banks of the Hudson to the suburbs of the Garden State to the streets of New Jersey's greatest cities, join RWJ Barnabas Health and the New Jersey Devils for the virtual 2020 Running with the Devils 5K and Walk, honoring our healthcare heroes. For the avid runner or the treadmill participant, together we're all running with the Devils. October 1st through the 25th to benefit the RWJ Barnabas Emergency Relief Fund. Wherever your feet take you, help ensure your local hospital resources to support its most critical patients today and tomorrow. Visit rwjbh.org/runningwiththedevils to register, and let's get healthy together while being apart. Back with Uche Nadukwe, a junior defensive lineman from Natick, Massachusetts, 3 sacks a year ago for the 8-2 Princeton Tigers. Uche, thanks for joining us. Where have you set up camp for the fall semester?
So right now, I'm back home with the folks in Natick, Massachusetts. I'm going to split my time between here and with my brother in North Carolina.
Let's go back a couple of years. Go back to your time in high school in Nobles in Massachusetts, out in Dedham. Take us through the recruiting process and how you ended up at Princeton.
You know, my recruiting process was unique to most people because, you know, unfortunately, I suffered a pretty bad injury the summer before my senior year. I actually tore my left Achilles tendon. So that was obviously a major injury and changed a lot of things. I actually tore it Fun fact, I tore it at Princeton, believe it or not, while I was at the recruiting camp here. And I think that kind of became the focal point for me, just, you know, worrying about my health. I was able to also focus back on my grades a little bit, get my SAT scores up, things like that. And for me, kind of what stood out about Princeton was the way they kind of treated me through this process. You know, a lot of schools, you realize when you get hurt that a lot of schools, they just want you for your body or for, you know, what you can immediately give them. But then you really see that there are coaches like Coach Sarais, Coach Verbit, that really care about who you are as a person, who you're going to be for those 4 years, who you're going to be after college. And they really just want what's best for you.
Let's talk about you off the field. Reading through your bio, classical upright bass. Not just football, not just academics. There's some musical talent there. When did music become one of your passions?
Music was probably the first thing I really worked hard at. My mom is a big fan of classical instruments. So my brother, my sister, all three of us, she put us in music from really young ages. I started playing, I think, like second grade. Played all the way through high school. I played in orchestras in school, outside of school. So it was a really big part of my life. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And in high school, you played basketball, which makes sense for a guy that's 6'4". You also rode, part of the crew team at Nobles. 6'4", 260, what you're listed at now. Doesn't seem that conducive for sitting in a boat.
Well, 6'4", 260, probably not. But I was a little bit smaller. It was freshman year. I was
just
about
1 year of crew.
Yeah, I did it in middle, like one, a little bit in middle school. They had like this trial period. And then, you know, I did it. I made varsity and I was like, this isn't for me. I was like, I'd much rather play football. So I had to stop that. But, you know, I did it. It was a good experience.
Let's talk about your experience on campus at Princeton. You're involved with the VSAC. That's the Varsity Student Athlete Advisory Committee. For people who don't know anything about it, what does that group do?
Our main job is to meet with Molly Marcuse-Mann, the athletic director, and she's really a wonderful wonderful lady, and her team is great. And what we do is we basically help advise her and kind of give her that student perspective that, you know, a lot of the faculty and staff don't really have, because they're just not in college at the time. So we talk to our teammates, you know, we are involved in the student athlete community on campus, and really try to be the voice for all students and make sure everybody's enjoying their time here.
You were part of the virtual first year athletics orientation last month. What was your message to the incoming class of 2024? I know it's kind of a strange year, but you were able to offer some words.
For my message, I really just wanted to say something that I felt would have helped me personally. And I just wanted to tell all the freshmen that the most important thing to do when you come to an environment like Princeton, where you're going to be pushed academically and athletically, you're going to have a lot of people you're competing against, is just to stay true to who you are. Remember the goals and why you came to a school like this, you know, and if you're always working towards those goals and staying true to yourself, then, you know, you'll find success here. It might look different from what other people are doing, but you'll find what you need.
Remote classes, remote learning this fall up in Natick, Massachusetts. What's your class schedule been like? And then how have you been able to fit in some workouts to stay in football shape?
It's actually a pretty heavy class schedule. So in some ways, maybe it's easier that it's online because I don't have to walk so many places. And, you know, I'm not walking down all the way to the stadium all the time. I'm in 5 classes this semester. I have to take 2 econ classes. So those are like really the hard, you know, bulk kind of work classes, econ 300 and 302. And then I'm also starting my junior thesis paper as well. So that's kind of what things look like academically right now. On the football side, you know, I think it's kind of, obviously I wish I could be with my teammates right now, working out every day, being with the strength staff and Coach Gallucci. They're all great, and Matt. But working out, I think I've gotten a new appreciation for it, because, you know, when you're kind of stuck at home a lot of the time, you're doing a lot of schoolwork by yourself, you know, working out gets to be kind of a way to like relieve a lot of stress, relieve a lot of tension, gets to be a little time you have for yourself every day. I've been going to just a local gym and just keeping up with all the workouts that Gallucci sends. We use that Team Builder app, so just staying up to date with that, adding in a few of my own things, really trying to work on my pass rush so I can really get the sack totals up next year. And it's been great.
What's the junior thesis?
Well, it's really in the early stages right now, but I kind of want, what I'm trying to do is look at areas or towns and counties with high levels of, with high numbers of African Americans, like the percentage of their population, and kind of look at the access to like banking services that they have, like, you know, access to like low mortgage rates. You know, how are these people like able to actually put their money in a bank? Are they able to open accounts easily? Are there a lot of like minimum fees for people who are low income in these communities? So like that.
Tying into that, you're an economics major, your internship this summer with Kingswood Capital. A couple of your teammates I know were there as well. Jim Renna, Henry Schlossberg, a couple of Princeton football alums involved with Kingswood. What was that experience like?
That experience was great. You know, I'm so thankful for it. I learned so much from Henry Schlossberg and Jim, and also, you know, Jay Rolater, one of the older guys on our team. He also is kind of economics minded, and I often ask him questions about what he's doing to try to, you know, follow in the right steps to get a job after you graduate. He's a really smart guy. So learned a lot from a lot of those people. You know, Henry Schlossberg, he gave me this great quote that I often think about a lot after the internship, that is like, hope is not a strategy. And it's, I think it's kind of helped me during this time a little bit, just because, you know, a lot of people are hopeful that when they come back, that they'll be, you know, the best football player, that, you know, they're hopeful that they'll get all these sacks, all these tackles, but, you know, it's not really a strategy. If you want to be better, you're going to have to put in the work right now. So, you know, I learned a lot. It was great.
Well, Jay, sounds like you're putting in the work. Thanks for taking a couple of minutes. Good talking to you, and best of luck with what certainly sounds like a challenging course load.
Yeah. Thanks, Cody.
Looking to buy or sell a home? Choose the Greater Princeton Area's real estate market leader, Callaway Henderson Sotheby's International Realty. Our expertise is local, our reach is global, and our remarkable agents produce unrivaled results. Stop by our offices in Princeton, Pennington, Montgomery, and Lambertville, or visit CallawayHenderson.com to search for homes, find an agent, and love where you live.
Does this place look haunted?
No, I don't think so.
What about those two creepy girls?
Come stay with us.
That is truly frightening.
You know what's really scary? Missing out on Geico's great service. With Geico, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Thank you, creepy girls.
Want to see our room?
We're gonna sleep in the car now.
Happy Geico-ing. Switch today for 24/7 access to licensed agents.
On fumble, Jatavis Brown, and it's picked up on the play by Reed. Look at Caron Reed rumbling all the way. He'll take it to the house. No yellow on the field. What a play by San Diego's D.
We're back with a two-time All-American defensive lineman, the captain of the 2013 Ivy League champion Princeton Tigers, and a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Caron Reed. Caron, thanks for taking a few minutes to join us today. How's everything going down in Duval?
It's going well. At least the weather's warm. We just finished the first quarter of the season, so we're looking forward to what the next quarter brings us.
Seventh NFL season for you. From a football standpoint, what's been different about 2020?
From a football standpoint, I mean, just going from jump of like missing the OTAs and training camp being a little bit different, you really have to focus more on yourself. I had to work out at home for the first time ever. From the NFL standpoint, it's just like everyone has to remain so fluid. Like you don't know, you expect the unexpected. All of a sudden COVID is one of the biggest concerns. And now COVID is just as likely as an injury, right? So you have to prepare for everything. Practice squad being kind of like a fluid state in which you can be up 1 week and brought back down without penalty, not subject to waivers. So it's changed the way that rosters are built for the better, giving more guys like myself an opportunity to compete and play on game day instead of being home and having to go through workouts and stuff like that.
Let's go back to your time at Princeton. So you came in 2009 was your freshman year. So you were around when Bob Cerace first got there. You were there for both of the 1-9 seasons. I know you were hurt for a while. You're also part of that Ivy League title in 2013 that sort of started getting everything in the right direction. When you look back on your years at Princeton and the success that this program has had since, I mean, is there one thing you can sort of pinpoint as the turning point? And I know guys talk about it where even early on when the wins weren't coming, you could feel that it was a little bit different than when you first got there.
Absolutely. I think the first 1-9 year, that was just rough all around. And then the second one, it was almost as if we just found like ways we were in there and we just happened to lose. I remember like we played Yale in that 2011, 2012 season. And it was a pass that was tipped by the Yale receiver. And somehow there's another receiver right behind him that magically catches the pass. And we're just like, how? All right, God, you just want us to be 1-9, don't you? So it was moments in which that second year, I believe we were a lot better built than we were the first. And then Serratia's third year when we went 5-5, I believe that year was the first year that we beat Harvard. And I think during that year, we really started to put things together.
Taking a look at some of the Princeton guys in the NFL. So four of you here in 2020, Kevin Davidson was in camp with the Browns. Seth DeValves played four seasons. Prior to 2013, Princeton hadn't had anyone drafted in over a decade. You and Mike Catapano kind of started that trend in the right direction. At what point at Princeton did you realize, hey, I've got a shot to play at the next level. Like this could be real.
I remember a couple of times our old defensive coordinator, Backus, Jared Backus, would tell me about a guy that he had in Temple and told me that he's playing in the league and he thinks I could play in the league. But it really wasn't cemented in my mind that this was a possibility because I was just still a sophomore. And I think around my first junior year, first year. Yeah, when I had a really good season, and I really just thought that it was just luck. I thought that guys weren't as – the competition wasn't as good. I didn't think of myself as being that caliber of a player. But having Sarace hammer that home to me, and then the next year having scouts actually at practice looking at me was like a different kind of feeling, which was like, huh, okay, this is real. But because no one had really gone through that path before, it was still just like, is this a real thing? And then when Cat got drafted, then it was like, oh, okay, the opportunity is for real. Yeah, until then, it was just like, maybe this will happen, but it hadn't really happened in Princeton since like Dennis Norman, I believe his name is.
Looking at everything you did on campus, so part of an acapella group, heavily involved in campus ministry, diving into some of the deeper social issues with what you wrote your thesis on, you're hurt and you went to work as a student aide at a local school, I think I read. All this time, you're also trying to get to the NFL and you're playing football at a high level and ultimately winning an Ivy League championship. Safe to say you got more out of your college experience than most students?
Yeah, for sure. My father always told me, if you're in college and you have time to watch TV, you're not doing enough work. So I for sure never had time to watch TV. But yeah, I'm grateful for Princeton for affording me all those opportunities. And I mean, literally, I didn't become a part of an acapella group until I got hurt. So those little things and just like, it helps you really discover those times and like when things don't go your way, getting hurt makes you really think, am I just a football player? What else is there for me in life? And I was able to explore every single avenue that I could, which helped make me a better man and definitely a better leader.
Let's talk about one of the leaders in this program, Steve Verbit, 36 seasons at Princeton. He was one of your defensive line coaches. What kind of impact did Verbs have on you during your time at Princeton?
The one thing Verbit would always tell me, he would always keep me honed in on the three keys of like winning pass rushes, like get off, stay on a half man and use your and flip your hips. So I think one of the things that he did so well, and he made sure I stayed low because he knew I could take advantage of things if I would, even if I was not staying low. But I think the biggest thing that Verbit teaches, just the way that he is as an individual, is just continuing to garner information, trying to get that competitive edge. If there's one thing that Verbit does better than most, he's always gleaning. He's always watching film. He's always, if it's an NFL, if it's college, he's always trying to learn. Even going down and speaking with NFL defensive line coaches, he's always trying to get that edge. And that's one thing that I know that I didn't really get on my collegiate level. But now as a pro, I take that to heart in terms of like, if there's an opportunity to watch even the NFL sacks of the week or to watch Aaron Donald, watch Geno Atkins, watch Fletcher Cox, someone who is doing what I want to do at a high level, taking that opportunity to be able to ask those questions, reach out, watch the necessary film. That's one of the things that I think Steven does better than anyone. If any defensive lineman has played for him, they know Verbit has all the folders in his files. So you're always able to get it.
Going back to that 2013 Ivy League title, looking back at that team, what stands out in your mind? What made that team so successful?
I think when you have a lot of guys who've gone through so much adversity, I just think about all the, I'll say, dogs we had on that team, especially on the defense. I think what Quinn ended up doing that year was spectacular. And we were just so involved with the defense and being excellent at what we did. I didn't even actually realize that Quinn was doing all that until the end of the year. But going from my guys up front, like Greg Sorterino's, Matt Landry, and then you had Elijah Mitchell coming in and getting, I think, like 6 or 5 sacks, and Jason Ray, then Phil, of course, on the back end, leading those young boys, Gaffney, John Hill, Rohan. Like, it's I looked at, like, man, we've always been good on defense at Princeton, at least those 2 years or those 3 years that I played with them, we've always been good, but I feel like we were just flying that year. Like, guys, it didn't matter. I remember it was moments where we were like, just give this, y'all don't offense, you do what you got to do. We're going to take care of this. And I think that was the biggest thing just coming from, I remember the first game of that season. I believe we lost to Lehigh, if I'm not forgetting, but we lost at home. and just coming in. And it was one of those moments where we're like, all right, we've had enough. We've lost enough in our Princeton career. Like, it's time to go. And everyone was on that same page of literally just getting after it. We held each other accountable. I know for sure I was probably really annoying to guys because I just wanted to win. I was, if you ask a lot of guys there, probably my junior year, they're like, yeah, he just wants to win. I'm like, yes, I'm tired of going home losing. But the guys who were there, we just took over. And that was the best part of that year.
29-28, you guys lost to Lehigh in the opener and then rattled off 8 straight wins in an Ivy League title. Karan, great catching up with you. Good luck this week.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the First in Football podcast, an inside look at Princeton Tigers football, and is a production of Learfield, IMG College.